Translation by Srila Prabhupada. After hearing the Mayavadi sannyasis speak in that way, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu smiled slightly and said, "My dear sirs, if you don't mind, I can say something to you regarding Vedanta philosophy." Srila Prabhupada's purport, quite a long purport. In which he has also quoted his Srimad Bhagavatam purport. The Mayavadi sannyasis, appreciating Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, inquired from him why he did not discuss Vedanta philosophy. Actually, however, the entire system of Vaishnava activities is based on Vedanta philosophy. Vaishnavas do not neglect Vedanta, but they do not care to understand Vedanta on the basis of the Sharirakha Bhashya commentary. Therefore, to clarify the situation, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, with the permission of the Mayavadi sannyasis, wanted to speak regarding Vedanta philosophy. The Vaishnavas are by far the greatest philosophers in the world, and the greatest among them was Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhu, whose philosophy was again presented less than 400 years later by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj. Therefore, one must know very well that Vaishnava philosophers are not sentimentalists or cheap devotees like the Sahajiyas. All the Vaishnava Acharyas were vastly learned scholars who understood Vedanta philosophy fully. For unless one knows Vedanta philosophy, he cannot be an Acharya. To be accepted as an Acharya among Indian transcendentalists who follow the Vedic principles, one must become a vastly learned scholar in Vedanta philosophy, either by studying it or hearing it. Bhakti develops in pursuance of Vedanta philosophy. This is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text 12. Tat shraddhadhana munayo jnana vairagya yuktaya pashyantyatmani chatmanam bhaktya shruta grihitaya. The words bhaktya shruta grihitaya in this verse are very important, for they indicate that bhakti must be based upon the philosophy of the Upanishads and Vedanta Sutra. Srila Rupa Goswami has said, Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancharatra Vidhim Vina Aikantiki Harer Bhakti Utpata Yaiva Kalpate. Devotional service performed without reference to the Vedas, Puranas, Pancharatras, etc. must be considered sentimentalism, and it causes nothing but disturbance to society. There are different grades of Vaishnavas: Kanishtha Adhikari, Madhyam Adhikari, and Uttam Adhikari. But to be a Madhyam Adhikari preacher, one must be a learned scholar in the Vedanta Sutra and other Vedic literatures, because when Bhakti Yoga develops on the basis of Vedanta philosophy, it is factual and steady. In this connection, we may quote the translation and purport of the verse mentioned above, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text 12. So now Prabhupada will quote the translation and the entire purport of that verse from his Srimad Bhagavatam. Translation: the seriously inquisitive student or sage, well equipped with knowledge and detachment, realizes that absolute truth by rendering devotional service in terms of what he has heard from the Vedanta Shruti. Purport. The absolute truth is realized in full by the process of devotional service to the Lord, Vasudev, or the personality of Godhead, who is the full-fledged absolute truth. Brahman is his transcendental bodily effulgence, and Paramatma is his partial representation. As such, Brahman or Paramatma realization of the absolute truth is but a partial realization. There are four different types of human beings: the karmis, the jnanis, the yogis, and the devotees. The karmis are materialistic, whereas the other three are transcendental. The first class transcendentalists are the devotees who have realized the Supreme Person. The second class transcendentalists are those who have partially realized the plenary portion of the Absolute Person. And the third class transcendentalists are those who have barely realized the spiritual focus of the Absolute Person. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita and other Vedic literatures, the Supreme Person is realized by devotional service, which is backed by full knowledge and detachment from material association. We have already discussed the point that devotional service is followed by knowledge and detachment from material association. As Brahman and Paramatma realization are imperfect realizations of the Absolute Truth, so the means of realizing Brahman and Paramatma, that is, the paths of jnana and yoga, are also imperfect means of realizing the Absolute Truth. Devotional service, which is based on the foreground of full knowledge combined with detachment from material association, and which is fixed by dint of the oral reception of the Vedanta Shruti, is the only perfect method by which the seriously inquisitive student can realize the Absolute Truth. Devotional service is not, therefore, meant for the less intelligent class of transcendentalists. There are three classes of devotees, namely, first, second, and third class. The third class devotees, or the neophytes, who have no knowledge and are not detached from material association, but who are simply attracted by the preliminary process of worshipping the deity in the temple, are called material devotees. Material devotees are more attached to material benefit than transcendental profit. Therefore, one has to make the definite progress from the position of material devotional service to second class devotional position. In the second class position, the devotee can see four principles in the devotional line, namely the personality of Godhead, his devotees, the ignorant, and the envious. One has to raise himself at least to the stage of a second class devotee and thus become eligible to know the Absolute Truth. A third class devotee, therefore, has to receive the instructions of devotional service from the authoritative sources of Bhagavata. The number one Bhagavata is the established personality of devotee, and the other Bhagavata is the message of Godhead. The third class devotee, therefore, has to go to the personality of devotee in order to learn the instructions of devotional service. Such a personality of devotee is not a professional man who earns his livelihood by the business of the Bhagavatam. Such a devotee must be a representative of Shukadev Goswami, like Suta Goswami, and must preach the cult of devotional service for the all-round benefit of all people. A neophyte devotee has very little taste for hearing from the authorities. Such a neophyte devotee may make a show of hearing from the professional man to satisfy his senses. This sort of hearing and chanting has spoiled the whole thing. So one should be very careful about the faulty process. The holy messages of Godhead, as inculcated in the Bhagavad Gita or in Srimad Bhagavatam, are undoubtedly transcendental subjects. But even though they are so, such transcendental matters are not to be received from the professional man, who spoils them as a serpent spoils milk simply by the touch of his tongue. A sincere devotee must, therefore, be prepared to hear the Vedic literature like the Upanishads, the Vedanta Sutra, and other literatures left by the previous authorities or Goswamis for the benefit of his progress. Without hearing such literatures, one cannot make actual progress. And without hearing and following the instructions, the show of devotional service becomes worthless, and therefore a sort of disturbance in the path of devotional service. Unless, therefore, devotional service is established on the principles of Shruti, Smriti, Purana, and Pancharatra authorities, the make show of devotional service should at once be rejected. An unauthorized devotee should never be recognized as a pure devotee. By assimilation of such messages from the Vedic literatures, one can see the all-pervading, localized aspect of the personality of Godhead within his own self constantly. This is called samadhi. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakada Mahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya 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 Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna. In India, and also in many other parts of the world perhaps, where there is some understanding, or shall we say misunderstanding, of the terms yoga, karma, jnana, bhakti, and so on, there is a conception that karma yoga is for those who are very active and energetic. Jnana yoga is for those who are very intellectual, very intelligent. Ashtanga yoga is for those who are physically very agile and fit. And bhakti yoga is for those who are very sentimental, very emotional. That is, of course, not true. Not to say that an emotional person is debarred from coming to bhakti, but it's not that bhakti yoga is meant only for those who are very emotional or sentimental. Bhakti yoga is actually the conclusion of the entire Vedic knowledge. It is a sum and substance and the essence of all knowledge. It is the perfection, the culmination of the Vedic understanding. So there is a deep connection between the terms Vedanta on one hand and Bhakti on the other hand. As we were discussing yesterday, the word Vedanta indicates the conclusion of all Vedic knowledge. Ved and Anta. And on the other hand, Bhakti refers to devotional service. That service which is rendered out of love to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. So what is the connection between the two? The two are, actually speaking, synonymous. They mean the same thing. Because one who is a genuine Vedantist, a knower of the Vedanta, must become a devotee of the Lord. Otherwise it means that he has not understood the actual conclusion of the Vedas. That is, he is not a true Vedantist. And one who is a devotee must be already understood to be a Vedantist. Because the devotee is rendering devotional service, which is the conclusion of the Vedic teachings. Therefore, he is understood, or she is understood, to have already digested and assimilated all the conclusions of the Vedic teachings. Generally, people think that it is the Advaitavadis or the Mayavadis or those who follow the Shankaracharya school of the understanding of the Absolute Truth as being something impersonal, where the individual living entity is one with the Absolute Truth with no idea of any differentiation also. They think that such monists or impersonalists are the true Vedantists. Or they are the only Vedantists even. But as Prabhupada has taken pains to point out in the purport of the previous verse, which we discussed yesterday, that is not so. In addition to the commentary on the Vedanta Sutra by Shankaracharya, which is called the Sharirakabhashya, there are numerous other commentaries that have been compiled or composed by Vaishnava Acharyas. And these are also to be understood as Vedanta commentaries, and in fact they are the real commentaries. Now the Vedanta Sutra, among all the Vedic literatures, is considered very, very important because of the word anta, or the conclusion or end. And the word sutra indicates something that is very concisely stated. Actually, in the Puranas, there are three conditions for something to be called a sutra. A sutra is generally some item of knowledge that is very concisely explained. So the first characteristic of anything that is to be called a sutra is that it must explain knowledge very eloquently in a very concise fashion, which means in the minimum of words. Number two, it must be universally applicable. And number three, it must be faultless in its linguistic presentation. So these are the three requirements of something to be called a sutra. So Srila Vyasadev, he compiled the Vedanta Sutra. And it's got many, many aphorisms, many, many such maxims, pithy statements, very short statements, two words, three words, four words, that's all. It's almost like a very secret code. And when you have a code, it requires some knowledge and intelligence to uncode it or decode it. So therefore there's so much difference of opinion, because somebody understands this code to mean this and somebody understands it to mean something else. And in the course of our reading of Srila Prabhupada's books, we do come across some of these codes of the Vedanta Sutra. Can anyone remember some of the more famous statements of the Vedanta Sutra that we speak often or we read often in Prabhupada's books? Anandamayobhyasat. That's the 12th aphorism of the Vedanta Sutra. And this means that the absolute truth, the Brahman, is actually his nature is of absolute bliss. So God is blissful by nature, not morose and tired because he's carrying the universe on his shoulders. He is blissful, and you can see him there smiling, playing the flute, engaging in pastimes with Srimati Radharani and the gopis and the cowherd boys and Mother Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj. So Anandamayobhyasa, that's one of the sutras or the maxims of the Vedanta. Anything else? Athato Brahma Jigyasa, that's the very first aphorism. Therefore meaning, now that you have obtained the human form of life, Brahma Jigyasa, inquire into the nature of Brahman or the absolute truth. Anything else? Excellent. Janmadyascha Yataha. That Brahman, which is the second maxim, so that Brahman who has been referred to in the first maxim, Athato Brahma Jigyasa, is defined right at the outset as the one who is the Janma, or the source of everything. And Adi means he's not just the source, but he's also the maintainer of everything, and he's also the destroyer of everything. And of course, we are familiar with the second aphorism because it is the very first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Janmadyasya Yato Anvayad Itaratas Charteshva Bhigya Swarad, and so on. So like this, these are the different sutras. I think there's more than 250 sutras. And each of them is condensed, concentrated knowledge. So Srila Vyasadev is very intelligent. So he has condensed the entire Vedic knowledge into these short statements, these short codes. And the entire Vedic literature, Vyasadev has divided into three categories. Srila Prabhupada explains this in his purports in pursuance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. They are called the Prasthana Traya. Traya means three. The Prasthanas refer to the three categories, the categories of knowledge. One is called Shruti Prasthana. The second is called Smriti Prasthana. And the third is called the Nyaya Prasthana. So Shruti Prasthana refers to that which is obtained, that knowledge which is obtained by hearing, the oral reception, specifically referring to the Upanishads and so on, the four Vedas. And then there is a Smriti Prasthan, that which is remembered after having been heard. So this refers to the Puranas and to the Bhagavad Gita, the Mahabharata, Ramayana and so on. And then there is the Nyaya Prasthan. Nyaya means logic. And this refers essentially to the Vedanta Sutra. So this Nyaya Prasthan is meant to basically give condensed understanding of the Shruti and also the Smriti. By presentation, very logical presentation, the word Nyaya refers to logic. So Srila Vyasadeva has concluded his entire Vedic teachings by compiling the Vedanta Sutra, which presents the absolute truth in a very logical way, in a step-by-step systematic fashion, building up the point from the beginning and going up further and further. And for those who think that the Vedanta Sutra is the end-all and be-all, which is not wrong, but there is one step further that Vyasadeva went, and that is the Vaishnava understanding is taught by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that is the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam is considered the commentary on the Vedanta Sutra compiled by the author of the Vedanta Sutra himself. And therefore it is referred to as the natural commentary. It's natural because it is compiled by the same author. So no one else needs to comment on the text when the author himself has given the commentary. It's like an auto-commentary. In the Sanskrit literary tradition, auto-commentaries are very common. For example, when Sanatan Goswami wrote his Brihad Bhagavatamrita, he also commented on his own verses. He compiled the verses and then wrote the commentary himself. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita Srimad Bhagavatam, we see that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, for example, has compiled the verses and then Prabhupada has commented on them. Or Srila Prabhupada has commented on Vyasadeva or Shukadeva Goswami's statements. So the commentator is different from the original compiler. But in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you see the commentator and the compiler are the same person. So it's called an auto-commentary. When the compiler of the work wants to elaborate on what he has spoken, so he writes a commentary. So Vyasadev has written a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, which is the Srimad Bhagavatam. And therefore, traditionally, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas have not considered it necessary or required to write a separate commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. In the literary circles, in the spiritual circles, it was understood that unless you have a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, you cannot be accepted as a bona fide sampradaya. A month or two ago, we had the Disappearance Day anniversary of Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan. who is one of our great acharyas, the Shiksha disciple of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. It so happened that in the court of King Jai Singh, who was a very devout and faithful Vaishnava, a controversy arose. As you know, due to attacks from the Mughals, the deities from Vrindavan had been moved to various other parts of the country, and many of them had been transferred to the place which is now called Rajasthan, because there were many Kshatriya, Rajput, Vaishnava kings, under whose protection the deities were safe. So the deity of Govinda Dev had been moved to Jaipur. And the king was a Vaishnava. And because the Gaudiya Vaishnavas had been worshipping Govinda Dev in Vrindavan, they also continued to worship Govinda Dev in Jaipur. So the king became very close to the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. But there were another branch of Vaishnavas who were called the Ramanandis. They were followers of a Vaishnava called Ramananda. And Payahari, Haridas, Krishna Das, he was a follower of Ramananda, and he was the leader of the Ramanandis in Rajasthan at that time. So they were a branch of the Sri Sampradaya actually, an offshoot. So they went to the king and they said, you know, you are so attached to the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, but they don't even have a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, just see. So how can you understand them to be a bona fide Vaishnava Sampradaya? We all have a bona fide commentary. Ours is a Sri Sampradaya, and we have Ramanujacharya's Sri Bhashya. And every other Vaishnava Sampradaya has it, but they don't have it. So the king was a little puzzled. He had heard this, that yes, every bona fide Sampradaya must have its commentary. So he asked the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, the priests who were there, and they said, well, actually our understanding is that there is no need for such a commentary, because Vyasadeva himself has written the Srimad Bhagavatam. But they wouldn't agree to that. He said, no. And they said, well, don't the other Vaishnava Sampradayas understand this? But still they have written a commentary, and you don't have any commentary. So then word reached the ears of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who was now very elderly. And he was not in a position to go to travel to Jaipur and to defend the case. So, because he was the leader of the Vaishnavas, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was in anxiety, what to do now? These Ramanandis wanted to take the king away from his faith and his belief in Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And also then it meant that Gaudiya Vaishnavas would be ostracized perhaps from the Vaishnava community as somebody who was not bona fide. So then he called upon his favorite Shiksha disciple, Baladev Vidyabhushan, who was also very scholarly. And he said, Baladev, now you have to do the needful. You have to go and talk to the king and debate with the Ramanandis and establish the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as being bona fide. So Baladev Vidyabhushan, with the blessings of Vishwanath Chakravarti, went there. And he began his discussions with the Ramanandis in front of the king. They asked him many questions, including as, why do you worship? You should actually worship Lord Narayan. You should not worship Krishna. It is Narayan who is the source of Krishna and not the other way around as you claim. In fact, you should not worship Srimati Radharani with Krishna also. And they had numerous such objections. That how can you worship Radharani and Krishna when they are not even married? That's not proper. So they came up with many such objections. And Baladev Vidyabhushan countered every one of those objections and said that name me one scripture where it says that one should not worship, or rather that one should worship Krishna separate from Narayan. Narayan and Krishna are one and the same person. And Srimati Radharani is the internal energy of Krishna. And she's eternally his consort. It was a very long discussion. But in any case, even though the Ramanandis were not able to answer the objections that were raised by Baladev Vidyabhushan, nevertheless, they kept returning to the point of an authorized commentary. So finally, Baladev Vidyabhushan said, "All right, give me a few days and I'll get back to you with a commentary." And everyone was surprised, even the king. How is it possible to come up with a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra just like that? So he went to Govindadev and he fervently prayed, "Oh Govindadev, it's up to you now." And the garland from the neck of Govindadev fell to the lotus feet of the deity. And Baladev Vidyabhushan understood this to be an indication of the mercy of Govindadev. And he retired to a solitary place. And some people say in 7 days and some people say in 30 days. Whatever. He actually compiled the Govinda Bhashya. He took each sutra of the Vedanta Sutra and wrote a Gaudiya Vaishnava commentary on that. And he understood that it was Govindadev himself who actually compiled this. It was Govindadev who inspired him from within to write what he was writing. So he entitled this as Govinda Bhashya. And Srila Prabhupada dedicates the Bhagavad Gita as it is to Baladev Vidyabhushan, who compiled the Govinda Bhashya. So the Gaudiya Vaishnavas had their commentary, and so now the Ramanandis could not do anything. The king was very happy, and thus the bona fides of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya were established. So in any case, this is the Gaudiya Vaishnava stand, that the Srimad Bhagavatam is a natural commentary, and so we study the Srimad Bhagavatam in great depth. And the Chaitanya Charitamrita is the living Srimad Bhagavatam also. How Srimad Bhagavatam comes to life in the lives of the great devotees is brought out by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees. So therefore, this Nyaya Prasthan, this Vedanta Sutra, is meant to indicate or explain all forms of a Vedic understanding with logic, systematically developing the whole body of knowledge. It is interesting that our founder Acharya is called Bhakti Vedanta also. It was a title that was given to him in 1947. Because he was very scholarly and learned in the Vaishnava scriptures. And the sannyasis got together, the Gaudiya Math sannyasis. This was after the departure of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And they said, this Abhay Charan Aravind Das, he's very scholarly. I think we should award him some title, as is the custom amongst the Vaishnavas. Then Bhakti Sarang Goswami, I believe, one of the godbrothers of Prabhupada, Abhay Charan Aravind Das, he said, let us give him the title of Bhakti Siddhanta. And then Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj was also present there in that group of sannyasis. So he said, no, actually that may not be appropriate because our guru is also called Bhakti Siddhanta. So it is not appropriate to give the same title. So let's give him the title Bhakti Vedanta, which means that one who has understood the full conclusions of the Vedanta as being devotional service and one who lives that life. Because he is very scholarly. One who understands the teachings of the Vedanta in essence and in completeness and who is living that life. So the word Bhakti Vedanta refers to two things. One, to indicate a person who is a devotee, who is also very scholarly in all the Vedic scriptures, and also to indicate that one, as a devotee, is automatically a knower of the Vedanta. So since then, the title Bhakti Vedanta has become very common amongst the Vaishnavas. Even in his purports, in the Srimad Bhagavatam first canto, when he's speaking about that pastime of Narad Muni in his previous life, having received the blessings of many wandering sadhus who came to his house, Prabhupada uses the term Bhakti Vedantas. So the young boy, he got the mercy of all these Bhakti Vedantas. So here also the purport, or the entire sum and substance of Srila Prabhupada's purport here is that bhakti is synonymous with Vedanta. True bhakti is not something that is done whimsically. It is based upon the Shastras. And here he quotes these two important verses. One is Shruti Smriti Purana Adi Pancharatrika Pancharatra Vidhim Vina Aikantikir Harer Bhaktir Utpatayai Vikalpate, that if one renders devotional service which is not based upon the sound teachings of the Shrutis and Smritis and Nyaya and so on, such bhakti simply causes disturbance in the society. So we'll stop here. It's already 8:45. So the conclusion being that bhakti is non-different from Vedanta. It is the actual perfection and the conclusion of all Vedanta studies. Hare Krishna.